and welcome to the ERP Organizational Change Journal podcast, brought to you by Nessel & Associates. Nessel & Associates is an ERP organizational change management firm serving the private equity industry. Hello, my name is Jonathan Donald, the founder of Invert Ventures, a change strategy firm. I'm here with my co-host, friend, and colleague, Dr. Jack Nessel, the founder of Nessel & Associates. The ERP Organizational Change Journal podcast seeks to share expertise, insight, and create effective conversations to help guide ERP organizational change to real, measurable, and verified success, expanding what we can see so we can act in a more effective way. We seek to promote, connect, and foster relationships in the ERP organizational change community. The primary purpose of this podcast is to discuss, share, and reflect upon effective and efficient ways in which to realize ERP organizational change success. We will discuss the people, process, and technological components of ERP organizational change. Our podcast is intended as a forum to study, share, and discuss ERP organizational change, and it's our sincere hope that it is a collaboration tool and resource. We hope that you find this podcast useful as we share lessons learned, explore best practices, and discover the human element and components of ERP organizational change. Our podcast draws on knowledge from extensive research, collaborative learning, practitioner experience of both project successes and project failures. A general review and overall theme of ERP and organizational change practice, literature, and research suggests that understanding and critically having an awareness of tactics founded in principle is fundamental for ERP organizational change success. Our podcast will discuss these tactics, explore these approaches, and discover the principles that they're founded upon, so that they may prove useful in addressing ERP organizational change challenges and risks and increase our likelihood of ERP organizational change success. Jack?
Thank you, Jonathan. And as usual, I'm so excited to co-host with you today and have our conversation with our guest. As we are a podcast that desires to engage in valuable insight into the world of ERP organizational change success, with interviews and roundtable talk, our guests include experts and pioneers in the field, organizational stakeholders, practitioners, and researchers. We are a discussion on any and all things ERP and organizational change, and our podcast is a platform for those seeking to share, learn, and reflect on ERP or organizational change success.
In this episode, we will discuss ERP organizational change success factors with Dr. Justin Goldson. Dr. Goldson is an ERP organizational change expert. He's also a professor, author, and a TEDx speaker. Dr. Goldson is a certified professional who's developed and executed comprehensive supply chain strategic plans, resulting in optimal customer satisfaction and profitability for clients around the world. His background is in consulting, planning, and leadership roles, and being knowledgeable about all aspects of supply chain management, agile project management, ERP implementation. I'm really excited because Justin brings a unique combination of experience with emerging technologies, supply chain management, and increasingly a focus on organizational transformation and those success factors.
While applied research is critical to any field, in the ERP organizational change field specifically, there is a gap between research and practice. While Dr. Goldston is incredibly knowledgeable in the supply chain and emerging technologies as well, today we'd like to primarily discuss his research and his book, Critical Success Factors in Enterprise Resource Planning, Implementation, and U.S. Manufacturing. And not to mention, we will have Dr. Goldston back on to discuss emerging technologies and supply chain specifically. Dr. Goldston is a friend, Nessel & Associates team member, and known to many for his cheerful passion to learn and to teach. Dr. Goldston, we are so happy to have you on our show today. Thank you very much.
Thank you for having me.
So let's get into the conversation. First, Dr. Goldston, how would you define for our listeners what is ERP and what's its value to organizations?
I get that question a lot, and I think that enterprise. The way I explain it, graduate students, I teach in the graduate school, and in some cases I have a lot of nurses. So they've never heard of the acronym ERP. You know, and I say ERP systems run. I said the function is in the name itself. An ERP system runs my enterprise. It provides visibility to the leaders of an organization. It provides visibility to the users of an organization through dashboards and KPIs and metrics. And it forms everyone within the company to make better informed decisions. So I would say that the ERP application is essentially the most vital tool within any company, regardless of your industry.
So if I'm hearing you right, Dr. Goldson, the ERP platform, in your view, is really a tool for organizations to help make better data-informed decisions.
I say absolutely, with the correct inputs.
Now there we go. So let's take a step back and set some context up for our listeners. Obviously, ERP can be incredibly powerful for organizations, as you've just explained, depending on the right inputs. And your research, you focused on critical success factors for ERP organizational change. What do you mean when you say critical success factors?
So with critical success factors, those are the processes, or is the human element, it's the technological elements that are vital to the success of an organization. Now, I did focus on small and medium enterprises because that was my primary organization I work with within the manufacturing and distribution industry. And I think that's very, 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 very important because 99.7% of the organizations in the U.S. are small and medium business. If you look at the academic literature, the majority of critical success factors are focused on the large enterprises. And I believe that the approaches are not applicable in many of these small and medium enterprises that are proposed and recommended in those studies. So I feel that there was a gap in the research in that area, and that's what prompted me to perform this study.
Dr. Goldson, this is fascinating. So I want to dive in a little deeper here, if you can indulge us. When you say small and medium-sized businesses in manufacturing, give us some more detail. What does this look like as a top-line number, number of employees? What's the range? So our listeners really get a feel of where these success factors apply, because I'm sure many of them are listening now.
So although the definition differs around the world, within the U.S., a small and medium enterprise is defined as an organization with 500 employees or less. Okay. Now, if we look at the ERP landscape, vendors have created these different offerings, if you will. So, for example, SAP will have their large enterprise, you know, their SAP S/4HANA solution for their large enterprises. And they'll have a solution for your medium-sized enterprise. And then they'll have solutions for the small enterprise. Infor does the same thing along with Oracle. So these software vendors are understanding the need, and they're providing solutions so these small startups, if you will, are able to easily scale.
Okay, so we really get a sense of where these critical success factors play. I'm sure you're familiar that one of the worst-kept secrets in large-scale transformations is that 60 to 70% of them fail to produce the results, and many of those fail in the following 12 to 18 months following implementation. And you referenced this idea in your book, and I'm now quoting, "A large number of failed enterprise resource planning implementations in the recent years, citing 2001 to 2016, make these projects a risky endeavor for organizations of all sizes." And you go on to state that research indicates that high failure rates in ERP system implementation, particularly on the metrics of budget, schedule overruns, and overall fit of planned business processes with implementation deliverables. There's a lot here, but I want to dive into this quote and understanding how we get transformations to be successful, what are some of the common challenges of ERP organizational change that makes failure so common?
I say you answered the question right there. It's organizational change. And I think that the organizational change fails because leaders do not explain the why. So that's one of the very first things I do in kickoff. In that first meeting, I tell leaders, I say that you have to do these gimbal walks, and you have to go to each department. You have to go to each employee. You have to understand what each employee, what each department does within the organization. You have to understand what their pain points are for their day-to-day jobs. And you have to tell these employees, where are we going? How are we going to get there? What's your involvement within this project? And most importantly, how is it going to positively impact you? Whenever you explain how it's going to positively impact that employee, now you get buy-in at the beginning of the project. And that's what you need, because I could have the sure. greatest solution in the world. People talk about SAP all the time. People trash SAP all the time. But SAP is not the largest provider in the world with having a bad solution. It's the adoption in the people.
You can't see it, but my head is nodding, and I have a big smile on my face. Because I couldn't agree with you more. So it sounds like failure to set the context and explain the why makes the
Absolutely.
Organizational change part of ERP the real challenge.
Yes, and I would say that's just not for ERP. That's for any initiative within an organization.
So true. So, Dr. Goldston, one of my favorite lines in your book, simply because it's true based on your research, my research, and the research of many others, is that there is a knowledge gap that exists between, quote, critical success factors identified in the literature versus those applied in manufacturing environments, unquote. So, unlike many other practices and fields, why do you think that the practice of ERP organizational change is not taking advantage of some of this great work and insight provided by research, by objective vendor neutral research?
I think that outlets such as LinkedIn are a contributing factor to that. We're influenced by social media, let's just face it. And also, you know, we're influenced by these industry publications. Those industry publications exist because they're sponsored by these large companies, right? So they're influenced to publish certain results. And there are some individuals out there that are, that call themselves unbiased, you know, software selection consultants, but they're biases, right? They have their biases. They have their favorites, you know. So always say trust no one. I always say it all comes down to the academic research, because that's the peer-reviewed research, right? There's going to be bias in everything. There's less bias, I will say, in academic research, as opposed to depending upon the industry journals and the software selection and things like that. Now, people are going to argue. These are my thoughts. And, I mean, I was in the industry for a number of years. But I think that there's some misconceptions in understanding the critical success factors and understanding the best solutions for the organization. And I think that, you know, there needs to be a place for academic research in this field.
Yeah, good points. You know, I think, Justin, just to add on to your comment in terms of, you know, this vendor selection process and being objective and vendor neutral, I think that what organizations should look for is what is the approach of the folks that are helping them with the vendor selection, right? So I think that if the approach is more based on, you know, a similar approach and methods that you would see in academia, and apply that to practice as well, where you make it very clear what your method is, what your mm-hmm. process is for vendor selection, and you walk through this process of, you know, does the product meet your business model, and are the requirements of the business met within the product? And then you keep drilling down and you let the process build a sound objective business case as to the selection of your product, right? So I think that if we apply some of these ideas that are actually used in academia and research to practice, that will help assure that at the end of the day, the organization is choosing the best, you know, solution for the organization. Because I mentioned before, and Dr. Goldston, you and I have had these conversations, you know, there's one best fit for every organization. So whether that's in terms of business modeling or requirements or cost or service and delivery or technology, there is one best fit for each business, and unanimous consensus that choosing the right solution is critical first step in an ERP organizational change effort.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree with you more. And I think, and you make it an excellent point in that, that research methodology, that's key, right? Showing the research methodology, showing you how you got those final three vendors, you know?
Dr. Goldston, I'm curious here because I'm interested to know what's driving your interest here, given that you've had a period in academia, you have a period in business. What really drove you to examine the factors for organizational change and ERP critical success? What's driving you here?
So I would say that the small and medium organization was underserved when it comes to the research, right?
Underserved.
Yes, the academic research on ERP applications, we're talking about the Hershey's, we're talking about the waste management, you know, and their implementations. We're talking about the Nikes. We're not talking about the small $10 million company where it's going to make or break that company.
Yeah.
Right? You know, the Hershey, they can come out of a failed implementation. Nike can come out of a failed implementation, but a $10 million manufacturer can't. They're closing their doors. You know, so that's the driving factor for me. That's the type of organization I worked with within my time within the industry. So I felt that they needed to be represented. You know, it's just viewed kind of a strange way, but this is how I view things. You know, whenever you look at the majority, you know, it's organizational diversity. Small, medium companies, organizational diversity, right? So we always look at the large organizations. We look at the approaches of those organizations, but that's not a one-size-fits-all approach. Those aren't one-size-fits-all critical success factors if I'm only looking at large organizations. Small companies do not have the resources. They don't have the capital to implement some of these approaches, and that's why I was looking at small and medium enterprises.
Dr. Goldston, I'm struck by the targetedness of your answer, really providing that intellectual diversity so that other companies, whether it's that $10 or $15 million manufacturer, also see themselves in the research, to link Jack's prior question. And I think this is super important that companies of all size can really relate to what are the critical factors for them. As you mentioned, the why applies in organizational change. It also applies when talking to companies about ERP organizational change.
Right.
We're going to switch gears here just a little bit and get into your actual critical success factors and the purpose of this study for our listeners. Jack?
Yeah, so Dr. Goldston, you know, you described some of the problem. You explained the problem. Can you distill down for our listeners, how would you describe the purpose of your study? So in maybe 3-4 sentences, what was the actual purpose of your study? What were you looking to accomplish?
So again, I was primarily looking to accomplish the fact that, so in my literature review, I looked at some of the existing studies on critical success factors, again, primarily focused on the large organizations, to see if they're applicable to the small and medium manufacturer, right? Because again, I felt my assumptions were that because of constraints in these types of environments, I didn't think they were applicable. So that was the purpose of my study. And again, we see all these studies come out. We see critical success factors come out. But a small and medium organization, you know, can kind of take that at face value and say, okay, well, I have to implement this. But they may not have the budget. You know, they may not have the time. They may not have the resources. So I just wanted to, the purpose was to focus on that small and medium organization.
Again, this focus on the small and medium is so important because if a company doesn't feel represented by the research, it's very hard to turn principles into best practice. And that's really the intention of this podcast. So thank you for really focusing on that work. My understanding, and so correct me if I'm wrong here, is one of the central questions you asked is, what is the level of consensus, if any, among ERP manufacturing consultants and researchers as to the desirability and feasibility of critical success factors for ERP implementation? And so as we start to dig a little deeper, I want to get our listeners who may come from a different background, specifically when you are talking about ERP implementation for small and medium-sized businesses, how do you understand the words desirability and feasibility? And why are these two words so important in the context of your study, Dr. Goldston?
So I'm going to take an example of what, because of COVID, I would say one of the silver linings in COVID is I'm able to speak at a number of different conferences. And I mean, from August until December 16th, I spoke at like 10 conferences around the world and met some amazing people. But I would say that the theme of these conferences is resilience. It is emerging technologies such as artificial intelligence and sustainability, right? So if I look at desirability, it is, okay, what critical success factors are desirable? What do I want most out of my implementation, my critical success factors? Now, I always want to get buy-in from my leaders, right? I always want to get my best employees in my organization. When a small and medium organization, because in most cases we are within the same building or we're spread out across two plants in the U.S., hypothetically, we could say that, right?
Sure.
That is desirable, right? It's going to be desirable. Because I'm within one plant, or if I'm in two plants across the country, that's feasible. I can make that happen. But if I take that same exact question and I put it within a global organization, right? Or I could put it in Amazon.
Sure.
Amazon has a distribution center in every single state in the United States, right? So is it feasible to get Amazon's best employees across all 50, for example, distribution centers? Probably not, right? So the desirability is, yes, that particular critical success factor is desirable. I want that to happen for my organization. I want that to happen for my implementation. But the feasibility is, okay, realistically, can it happen? Will it happen? You know, so that's how I define desirability and feasibility.
So I just want to circle back here to make sure I'm understanding this. From the perspective of the small business owners, small and medium-sized business owners, the desirability is, does this help? Is this something we want? And then the following question is feasibility. If it's something we want, do we think it's possible? And then to ask, if it is possible, how are we going to make it possible? And that pulls us more towards your critical success factors. Is that right?
Yeah, that's correct.
So, Dr. Goldston, I want to circle back. You'd mentioned here earlier that you did a literature review. So during your research and in your extensive literature review on the topic of ERP success factors, what would you say were some of the general emerging themes from the current literature? That is, in what ways did your review of the literature guide and inform your research?
I would say within the literature itself, first off, the theme was those studies were primarily focused on large enterprises. I would also say that the themes where we talk a lot about with organizational change, we talk a lot about leadership. And again, I said we talk a lot about it. It's in the literature. But in reality, in the industry, we don't walk the talk, right?
Yeah.
Yes, there are organizations that offer organizational change consulting, but they're focused on the implementation. They're focused on the selection. They're not focused on getting those people ready for the selection, getting those people ready for the implementation.
Let's highlight this. This is so important. Can you say that again? That the consultants are serving a different purpose.
Exactly. They're serving a purpose that's going to put money in the bank, right?
they're not serving the true purpose. They're not serving the true purpose that these, especially small and medium organizations.
So it sounds like one of the big results of the research is that it's one thing to consult about vendor selection. It's another to set up an organizational process to ensure that the vendor selection is done by best practice and best principles.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So, Dr. Goldstein, I believe that from your literature review, it informed your decision to examine 22 specific critical success factors. Mm-hmm. And so, as noted in your book, but I'd like to take just a moment for our listeners to describe these, but then I would like to pause on a couple for additional explanation. So I just want to provide some insight to our listeners as to specifically what success factors you are addressing in your study, and then on a couple, just to give them some idea of what a success factor is and what it means. But then for about three or four of these, I'm going to pause and just ask you to elaborate just a little bit. So the first one was cultural change readiness. The next one was top management support and commitment. The next one is knowledge capacity production network. Can you explain what that is in terms of a critical success factor?
So knowledge capacity production network is primarily what does my knowledge base look like, right? So we talk about knowledge sharing, we talk about knowledge bases, and that's essentially where if my organization, for example, in a manufacturing facility, is my knowledge primarily on the shop floor with those frontline employees, or do we have a repository that holds all of these standard operating procedures for an organization, right? And how is that knowledge base distributed throughout our organization?
Sure. Okay.
Now, I would say that large enterprises, they do an amazing job of this. So they have no choice. They have people all around the world. They have tens of thousands of employees. They have to have a knowledge base. They have to have a knowledge network. But small and medium enterprises that I've worked with, some of them struggle to have a standard operating procedures, right? So
sure.
So that's where that one comes from.
Could you call this knowledge management? Would that be a frame for some of our listeners to understand it?
You could call it knowledge management, but I think that, you could call it knowledge management, but I think it takes it a step further where it kind of creates that knowledge management network, if you will, right? It's not, how do I put this?
So
it's the distribution and communication of that knowledge.
Along with its production. So it's the production,
Correct.
Distribution, and storage of that knowledge. Okay.
Right.
Got it. So to continue here, the next critical success factor you list is minimum customization, and then legacy system support, and then ERP fit with the organization, and then local vendor partnership, and then detailed cost. Can you elaborate a little bit on detailed cost for our listeners?
So I would say for implementation, we don't track the true cost of implementation. I know that whenever we're performing ERP selections, we go to the vendor and say, okay, what's the all-in cost? They'll give us a response. No, what's the all-in cost? You know, so we have the all-in cost from the vendor perspective, but we do not look at the cost of the time for the project team. We don't look at the cost of the time for the training of our employees. We don't look at the cost of the time for the any kind of administrative cost. So it's that full implementation cost of the organization. You know, we don't evaluate the cost in terms of risk and things like that. You know, so that's just that detailed cost of that full ERP implementation.
Sure.
Because that is going to be fed into the business case for this ERP implementation at the front end.
Sure.
So.
Yeah, great point. Exactly. So to continue with our list here, the next is business process reengineering, and then risk management, and then a detailed data migration plan. And then the next one is measurable goals. Can you elaborate on that one, and why is that so important?
So in terms of measurable goals, especially in small and medium enterprises, those measurable goals,
we ask the question of, okay, how do we know whether or not we're going to be successful in this project? Most of the time it's crickets, right? They don't understand. They don't understand, one, what the goals are, and two, how we're going to measure those goals. Okay. Sure. So what doesn't get measured doesn't get done, right? If we don't monitor those goals, if we don't march toward those goals, we're just implementing a system, right? We're just simply implementing a system to operate out of. And in some cases, we're just paying for a $200,000 piece of software because we're putting garbage in it. We're taking garbage out of our legacy system and putting the same exact garbage into a new shiny piece of code. That's the way I refer to it. We're transferring our garbage in a new shiny code, right?
Got it.
So
right.
We have to have those measurable goals to have something to march toward on this implementation.
Got it. So, Dr. Golson, allow me to, I want to finish off this list. So let me actually read through the rest of these, and then I'm going to kind of jump back and ask you about two more of these. So next on your list, in your study, you've identified and really took a look at 22 different critical success factors based on your literature review. And so to continue, after measurable goals, you had small internal team of best employees, you had open and transparent communication, and then base point analysis. The next one is moral maintenance. The next one is contingency plans. The next critical success factor is ERP success documentation. The next one is user feedback usage, and then maximum potential usage. And lastly, results measurement. Can you tell us a little bit more about two of these in the interest of time? We could spend a lot of time talking about all these critical success factors. They're all very interesting and they're all very critical. How would you describe base point analysis as a critical success factor for our listeners?
So base point analysis is pretty much benchmarking, right? And if I want to benchmark a implementation, I want to take an organization that has implemented the same solution, right? And I want to benchmark against that organization. And whenever we're in the software selection process, yes, you're going to the sales personnel at these vendors are going to give you references, and when they give you references, they're going to give you the best companies. You know, they're going to give you their happy customers, but that's a good thing, because whenever you interview those positive references, you know, ask them to get their measures, right? So you can benchmark against the good guys, right? And now you can go, you know, with social media. You can go on LinkedIn and you can find other users, and you can get feedback based on those organizations as well on products that did not go so well for that solution. Right?
So I highly recommend that you do that.
Do your own research. Get the best from the sales cycle, but also do your own research and get some insights.
Yeah, so isn't the idea there, Dr. Goldston, this idea that it's hard to improve that which you don't measure, and this provides that proof in the pudding for success?
Yeah.
Is that the idea?
I mean, that's a big gap in the ERP implementation space is, you know, not many companies measure it.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think that, as you know, that the idea of quote-unquote success can become quite subjective. So I think that over the time of an ERP organizational change implementation, there's a couple of things that are for certain. Unless you're very clear on what success means and you clearly articulate and define that, it can become a very subjective term, number one. And number two, people's perception of success over the course of the organizational change effort can vary. So I think this is an important point, because that builds kind of that framework around, you know, again, that proof in the pudding and actually measuring and making sure that you're heading in the right direction. So that's a very, very important point. And then lastly, Dr. Golson, the one I want to just ask you about to mention for our listeners, and I personally think this is a pretty important one, but this idea of moral maintenance. Can you elaborate on that one, please?
Yep, so that's just ensuring that we keep the morale throughout the organization. Now, again, with any project, everyone's excited at the beginning of the project. Everyone's gung-ho at the beginning of the project, but eight months of grueling work and 8 months of data scrubbing and data cleansing, we got to keep that morale up. and celebrating small wins is important. And one thing that I do is I have the leaders of the organization have a cookout, you know, and to pretty much announce the project, you know, have a competition of teams to name the project, you know, make search for the project, get people excited about it, you know.
Sure.
And as you progress throughout the project, you know, make it keep the momentum going. So at your all hands meeting, you know, have a section within that meeting to talk about the progress of the project. You know, acknowledge the team members of that project. So we again keep that morale up for this project, because these projects are, you know, they're long, they're grueling, there's difficult times, especially with data maintenance and things like that, and you know, the organizational change management is difficult, and sometimes especially in manufacturing and distribution environments. This is a different environment as compared to, you know, a healthcare environment or your traditional office environment, you know, where everybody works together. You know, it's a different, you have unions to work with, which is a totally different podcast in itself. So, you know, you have a difficult industry in this particular industry that you're dealing with, and you have to keep morale up.
Right. You know, Dr. Golson, that's a great point. And I think this is an idea, too. You and I are consistent that based on literature review, again, based on this research, it's telling us that's a major part of a successful ERP organizational change effort, is addressing the morale and knowing how to handle the morale and keep it up, because it is tough. It's a challenging. It can be a long, arduous task of these ERP implementations. And one of the things, too, is that often when you look at, and I've studied thousands of ERP organizational actual project plans, is it's really important to have something that's kind of concrete and some sort of tactical, something built into your project plan that addresses morale maintenance specifically, right? So don't just say it's important or it's a critical success factor. Do something about it. Build up that awareness within your organization. Have something within your project plan as a way of contributing to positive morale maintenance, right? So it's these critical success factors, all of them, not just morale maintenance, are items that should be considered in everybody's project plan to some degree.
This is fascinating. And before we just change gears and dive in a little deeper, I want to say, when I hear morale maintenance in my background in organizational change, I think about cultural implications for doing these kinds of change. And the idea of having morale maintenance as a condition for success is really powerful, because then you can mm-hmm. come in and actually say, look, we've got morale down, and this relates to a higher risk of ERP failure. So just this identification of this success factor is really empowering to have those conversations. So that's fantastic.
And you bring me to a different thought, in that it should not take an initiative like an ERP application to implement morale maintenance within the organization. Morale maintenance should be an ongoing effort for leaders.
Dr. Goldson, that is, again, my head is nodding, but that is another podcast or series of podcasts in and of itself. I want to dive in a little deeper. Out of this list, what do you think are the top four for our listeners? Was there any consensus here?
I would say during the literature review, as well as in my survey results, it was unanimous that top leadership support was the number one critical success factor. I agree with that. That was one of my assumptions.
Sure.
You also have quality management, which was one of the top. You had the internal team of best employees. I would say if I had my top three, you know, I would say that it was in three out of four. Top management support is my top. Small internal teams, my number two. ERP fits my third. And then with also, like I said before, the quality management, what rounds out the top four within this study. So again, you have and these surveys are enlightening in that, you know, you do get, you know, different ideas. Well, you have people operating in different environments. Although
sure.
you may be in a small and medium enterprise environment, you're in different verticals, right? you know, a small and medium manufacturing environment that caters toward, you know, healthcare is going to be vastly different than someone that caters toward the oil and gas industry.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
You know, success factor is going to be different. So that's interesting. Well, that's always interesting to me.
When I hear you talk about those top three and then list the top four, the first thing that comes to me from my lens of looking at it is the two of the top three are people-focused of our triad. And I find that really interesting. I also want to look at this from a couple different perspectives. My assumption here is that your study looks at it from the academic expert perspective. But if you could put on a management view of leading one of these small and medium-sized manufacturing entities, or the practitioner of people on the ground in the shop floor using this, what do you think their top three would be?
I still think leadership. I still believe that. See, I put in cultural change in those top three. From practitioner. Because from a management perspective, that's often overlooked. Cultural change is often overlooked. And that's with me sitting in conference rooms, you know, speaking about implementations with these leaders. And I think that if you want to look at it from a management perspective, I would still say that the top management support is number one. I would also say that they would view ERP fit as being the top. And then depending on the management team that you're talking to, you know, some may say detail cost. That's all I'm concerned with. And again, I'm thinking about my past clients, right? And their mindset. But they I would say from a management perspective, they aren't really looking. Again, I'm thinking about my people. You can ask 10 different individuals that were in as practitioners, you're gonna get 10 different answers. They miss the people aspect and how important the people aspect is to these implementations or to any initiative. To me, that's the most important part. Without the people, this thing doesn't work.
Dr. Goldson, I'm nodding my head again. My head's going to fall off. I'm agreeing with you too vigorously here. Without the people, the implementation and the process does not work. Fantastic.
So Dr. Goldston, you mentioned there in responding to Jonathan's question, leadership and culture. And I think that it's pretty common knowledge that ERP organizational change is likely to fail when organizational culture required for such a change is in contrast to the actual organizational culture. And in your book, you spend a fair amount of time writing or discussing anyways, transformational leadership. Why is that, and what is the relevance of your research, and what have you learned in terms of transformational leadership? So can you maybe just quickly explain what that is to our listeners, and then how is that relevant to your study?
So essentially, transformational leadership is that's where that organizational change piece comes in, right? We have the transactional leadership that has its place in the industry. So for example, without transactional leadership, Amazon would not get my Amazon Prime packages here to my house, and I would be very upset. So there's a place and there's an industry for transactional leadership. Transformational leadership is that you are empowering your employees. You are providing opportunities for your employees. You are influencing change within an organization with transformational leadership. Whenever I started out in academia, I started teaching at the Jack Welch Management Institute. And if you look back on Jack Welch's evolution, I refer to his career as evolutionary leadership, right? Where he started out as a transactional leader. Then he moved to a transformational leader. But ultimately, he ended up as a servant leader, right? So I would say all that falls into this evolutionary leadership kind of umbrella, if you will. Now, whenever we talk about, you know, ERP implementations, you have to have that transformational leadership. Now, I always say to be a true leader, to be viewed as a CEO of the century like Jack Welch, You have to blend these styles. They have to be blended. These are my thoughts. There is not a standalone leadership approach. There's not a standalone leadership theory to be a true leader within an organization. You gotta kind of sprinkle in all of them, right, if you will. When we talk about a ERP implementation, that's when we talk about this transformation leadership. So we influence change. You know, we are harnessing innovation with implementations. We are encouraging collaboration and communication among our team members, because we can build new cultures, you know, through an initiative like an ERP implementation.
Dr. Goldson, again, this is fantastic. And we get to a section where we're taking transformational leadership and looking at really an ERP and any organizational change, whether it's people, process, and technology, or mindset, behavior, culture, systems. I want to get your reflections. You know, what do you see? And you've already alluded to some of this in your critical success factors. But right now, what do you see as the most pressing and greatest challenge for ERP and any organizational change? And what's the most unappreciated lever we have to resolve it?
Yeah, people. End of story.
People. End of story.
Yeah.
So I'm gonna follow up with you, because this is an area I spend a lot of time working on and helping leaders become transformational leaders. So when we say people, end of story, the pushback I hear is, yes, okay, check the box. So what do you see as the means by which to help leaders see, act, and become able to be those transformational leaders in ERP? I'm going to push you here.
Yeah, I would say that, you know, we talk about organizational change, but it needs to be added to leadership and organizational change. Because when we talk about organizational change, it's the leaders who need to train the most.
That's a fantastic answer. You know, leadership modeling is such an underrated tool for organizational transformation.
Yeah, and I think we've all seen it, where these leaders get sent to these training sessions and they're sitting on their phone answering emails the entire time. They need to be held at the same accountability than their employees that they send to these training sessions, right? And they need to get tested and analyzed, just like their employees get tested and analyzed and evaluated. Now, I bet you they listen, right? Check the egos at the door, you know? And I think that if we take that approach, I think that you're going to have more successful ERP implementation. You're going to have a greater work environment. You're going to have more innovative and collaborative work environments.
I hear you.
Egos out.
There's a great conversation we had with Ron West on this topic. So for our listeners who are interested.
Yeah. So Dr. Goldston, if you had to sum up your research and explain what you've learned, what would you say to our listeners in three or four sentences? How would you sum up your research?
I would say you all just briefly discussed this earlier, where when we talk about ERP implementations, when we talk about from a people, process, and technology perspective, technology is third. Where if leaders look at it, they'll say technology is first. You need to, from a process perspective, you need to get your house in order first. You need to get your processes in order. You need to get your data in order. And then you need to prepare your people for an initiative like this. Because for small and medium organizations, this is probably going to be the biggest project they've ever done in their existence, right? So your employees have the fear of the unknown. The leaders have no idea what they're doing in most cases. There's some people who have experience in implementing ERP systems and kind of rely on them to lead that charge in terms of organizational change. But again, the people and process perspective of these organizational change initiatives are very important. The technology comes third. Most important thing I can say in this whole entire discussion, technology is only a tool. All it is. It's not a silver bullet. It's not going to save your company. It's only a tool to help your people, to make your processes more streamlined, more efficient. It's only a tool.
So Dr. Goldston, quickly here, I think what you're saying, you know, early on in our conversation, we discussed how important how critical it is for ERP selection, right? Which is a very much a functional technical part of the project. But what I hear you saying, really at the end of the day, the glue that kind of holds everything together is leadership and culture. Is that a fair summary of what you're saying?
Absolutely.
I'm so pleased with this conversation. I think your perspective here on that people are first and technology is just a tool is a really useful inversion of what we're seeing out in the marketplace. So I really want to thank you for sharing your perspective. I want to narrow us down, because one of the things we try and do on this podcast is give practitioners and leaders a real tangible tool or way of thinking or mindset or behavior that they can use in their day-to-day when they're in an ERP implementation or when they're thinking about it. And so based on this whole conversation, Dr. Goldston, and all of your research, if you could tell leaders one thing to focus on, one thing to do, and one way of being, one approach to how they show up that would dramatically increase their success in organizational and ERP change, what would they be?
I would say get back to basics with your data and get back to basics with your processes.
That's the thing to focus on and the thing to do. And what about the how to be? How should leaders and practitioners show up?
Be servant leaders. Be servant leaders to the people of your organization, and be there to provide guidance, because another thing I talk a lot about is shared leadership, where everyone is accountable within an organization. And that's one thing I'm beginning to speak a lot about in terms of shared leadership. That leads to empowerment. That leads to innovation within organizations. That's what takes shared leadership is what takes organizations to the next level.
It's so important these days, underspoken about topic. Dr. Goldston, thank you so much. Such a pleasure to have you on.
Dr. Goldston, thank you so much, my friend, for your time today. We truly appreciate your work and insight. I personally appreciate your passion, your desire to learn, and a genuine desire to teach. We wish you the best of luck and continued success. Thank you again and be well.
All right. Thank you.
We are incredibly excited and grateful to have friends, colleagues, and mentors join us on our podcast. We have an incredible lineup of ERP and organizational change speakers, authors, professors, researchers, pioneers in the field, practitioners, private equity partners, business executives, ERP vendors, and organizational stakeholders. Please join us for our next episode as we have Gary Moskovic join us to discuss a business intelligence game changer, RFID, radio frequency identification. Gary is the SML Senior Group Vice President for the Americas. He's a senior executive with a proven track record of success with global business development and management. He's known in his organization for emphasizing staff and resource accountability, leading change, team alignment, cost savings through consolidation and leveraging existing infrastructure, with experience in commercial strategy. Gary has worked both internally and externally in internal and client-facing roles. Please join us to hear what Gary has to say about the role and business implications of RF technologies. We look forward to exploring with you on our next episode. And before you go, please don't forget to subscribe and join our podcast so you can hear our latest episodes. Of course, we invite you to leave us feedback and reviews, because we want to make sure this is the most useful and insightful podcast you listen to. And we need your help and feedback in order to do it.
Thank you, Jonathan, and thank you, listeners, for being with us as we seek to, one, promote, connect, and foster relationships in the ERP organizational change community, two, contribute to the field of ERP organizational change, and three, bring research and practice closer together. Please join us again next week as we discuss the latest ERP organizational change research, practice, and stories. Our podcast will draw on knowledge from extensive research, collaborative learning, and practitioner expertise and experience.
With that, everyone here at Nessel & Associates and Invert Ventures wishes you a fantastic week, and we look forward to seeing you next time on the ERP Organizational Change Journal podcast. Bye for now.